Welcome back to Radio Physics, a collaboration between the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Radio in Carbondale, and advanced physics students from high schools across the Roaring Fork Valley and beyond. Every summer, our interns spend a couple of weeks at the center getting a behind-the-scenes look at what some of the world's top physicists are working on, and speaking with them one-on-one, asking them the kinds of questions we're all curious about. I'm Marisa Walbert, and I'm hosting today's show, which we're recording right here at the Aspen Center for Physics. With me today is Josie Jacobs, a rising senior at Aspen High School. Josie will be interviewing Monica Jinwu Kong. Monica is an assistant professor in the Physics and Astronomy Department of Texas A&M. Previously, she was a Center of Particle Cosmology postdoctoral fellow at the University of Pennsylvania Center of Particle Cosmology and the High Energy Theory Group, and a Sherman Fairchild postdoctoral fellow at the California Institute of Technology Walter Burke Institute for Theoretical Physics and the Particle Theory Group. Monica's research is on understanding quantum gravity and quantum field theory, aiming to describe our universe from large to small scales. As a mathematical physicist, she investigates the fundamental nature of quantum gravity and quantum field theory through discovering their mathematical and quantum error-correcting structures. Her work draws from and contributes to a wide array of disciplines in theoretical physics and mathematics, including conformal field theory, supersymmetric field theory, string theory, semi-classical gravity, quantum information theory, lattice gauge theory, algebraic geometry, and operator algebra. Take it away, Josie.
Hello. Firstly, Monica, I would like to thank you for making the time to speak with me. It's truly an honor to interview you and learn from your perspective and expertise. My first question for you would be to briefly describe your educational background.
Thank you so much for having me. It's really great to meet you. I did all the way up to my high school, so grade school in South Korea. Mm-hmm. Then I came to the U.S. as an undergrad. So I did major in mathematics and physics at UC Berkeley. And then I continued onwards to do a PhD at Harvard University. And there I focused on the high energy theory and mathematical physics aspects that I continue to do to this day. And then I took on my postdoctoral journey starting at Caltech. Mm-hmm. And then I moved to UPenn. And I guess I will start a assistant faculty position at Texas A&M, which is very exciting.
Very exciting. I was wondering, how has your experience at different institutions like Caltech, Harvard, and the Center for Particle Cosmology shaped your approach to research, and how do they differ culturally?
So that's actually a very interesting question, because the West Coast and the East Coast does have a different style and approach to these physical problems. West Coasters tend to be more casual, idea-focused, and it's more fluid type of thinking. Whereas in contrast, East Coast tend to be a lot more rigid and structured and a more rigorous way of thinking. A particular good example for this is that there is this model about something we can learn about with entanglement entropy and quantum gravity. It has a West Coast model referring to a paper, an East Coast model referring to a paper. East Coast model is like really more well-structured, very explicit computations and stuff. And the West Coast model is much more idea-based. It's less computation-focused, but essentially provides different type of models accessing the same type of answer. So that's pretty interesting, I think. In modern days, it's probably less different from when I was a student time, whereas when I was a student, I could really tell the differences. It was pretty shocking to me when I actually moved from first Berkeley to Harvard. Then I was back to Caltech. I was like, ah, right. So I don't know. I personally benefited heavily by having both styles of thinking. I actually still incorporates both aspects, probably slightly more East Coast influenced, since that's where I actually did my PhD. But I think it's really beneficial to learn both ways.
And then, so how do you think it's going to manifest at Texas A&M?
That's a great question. I actually have no idea yet. I guess I will learn after more years of exposure there. My expectation is that people there are very international in our field, so probably not much of a difference, and a lot of them were going through a lot of East Coast style, so it would be my guess. And their expertise tend to be a lot more formal than current West Coast style, so that would be my expectation.
Very interesting. And then what first inspired you to pursue physics?
That's actually a really difficult question. So I went to a very special high school in Korea. This is the at the time the only national school in STEM. And I luckily got in, and that was kind of a big decision for me that I want to actually learn about more about science and math. And from there, I was not sure at first because it looked all kind of interesting. I just liked understanding why things really work. And what was really speaking to me was that I could describe some objects and where it's going to go. And these can be actually described and predicted very precisely. And these are really the beauty of physics, that I think physics is really about how to describe as kinematics, to actually understand how it came from the past to present, describe the current state in the present, and dictate what will be the possible outcome in the future. So I think that was very exciting to me. And at the same time, I really like the elegance of math. I'm a mathematical physicist, so I really like doing things in very stringent mathematical formalism where I can precisely manipulate and see its elegant structures it can rise about. But I think physics was kind of giving it in the context of reality in some sense. So I think that's what I really liked about it in that way.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the super interesting part I've been finding because I've gone into higher level math and physics. I was wondering more specifically how you decided your specialty.
So I went to PhD, not sure what precise field that I wanted to do. All I was sure about at the time was that I wanted to do some mathematical things combined with some physics aspect. And at the time, I was really more of a condensed matter theorist, which is what I wrote my honors thesis in from undergrad. Though I also wrote this math thesis as well. So I was not sure, and I took this string theory class, which was taught by Professor Kamran Vafa, and that was really almost mythical and magical. So that kind of made me to realize that maybe this is a type of field that I want to pursue, which utilizes a lot of mathematical beauty and elegance that I don't have to give up yet. And that can be actually useful for describing what can be possible about like gravity and quantum and these things that I did not see how that can be described together about. So I think that's when it really hit me to jump into these type of discipline. And it's been really a blast ever since.
And then for the audience, your research involves many complex topics, like you just mentioned, like quantum field theory, string theory, and algebraic geometry. How would you explain the core ideas of your work or some of your work to someone new to physics?
So there was a great discovery when I was an undergrad. Actually, it was my senior year. That was the Higgs boson discovery. It's kind of validified that our quantum field theory was really a great way to think about it and can describe the standard model of the universe. And that was, I think, really a big news to not just physicists, but to all news channels were covered with it. I think I still remember it to this day. But this quantum field theory is really fantastic. It really describes a lot of micro systems, like quantum regime. But at the same time, we live with gravity. Gravity is kind of a magical thing to me because that's the first thing I learned by going to middle school and high school, how to describe parabolic motion. How does the car really stops and why there's a friction really helps. So like when there's snow, this is why we get hydroplaned in the car. So in many ways, then gravity is the first concept we learn about it in physics that we can compute very visibly. And then soon we learn that there are things like black holes and these things, which are really like a strong gravity regime, but it's quantum mechanical at the same time. So what's really shocking about it is while gravity was the easiest thing to understand, it's also the hardest thing to understand at the same time. And that was very interesting to me. And this is what kind of made me to work on these type of fields. Mm-hmm. The essence is more of like, how do we actually describe these quantum aspect of gravity? And the one way to think about it is where does the quantumness really comes from? And the core concept that I like to explain is this thing called entanglement. So one way to think about it, so let's say I have this hand and this hand that can move it separately. Mm-hmm. Their motions are not connected because these two are separate entities. So they are separate systems. So we learn in quantum mechanics, like we can have entangled pair particles and or spins, like electron systems. And we have this measurement problem so that we don't know, like you hear about the Schrodinger cat and these type of things mm-hmm. that you have to know to measure and that it kind of determines the state. So that we actually understand if they're entangled pair, we measure here, then we measure this together. Because these two are entangled one another, it's really what distinguishes from classical system like earlier, mm-hmm. that they're completely separate. So another way to think about it is that the entanglement is really the feature that arises from being quantum. And a way to think about it is that sometimes that this entanglement can be then explicitly computed, and these are called entanglement entropy, just mm-hmm. a physical quantity that we should be able to measure and compute and understand. And while describing these non-gravitational systems, and these means that these will be then understood as where they're separated or not separated. So there was this big discovery called holographic principle, mm-hmm. or a specific rendition is called anti-de-Sitter space conformal field theory correspondence. What it means is that there's a dimension lower quantum system that has nothing to do with gravity, and their quantumness, the entangled nature of that, is filling in a dimension higher, like in the bulk field, so that you can actually understand that where the separation occurs or not. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of way that we can think about as the emerging gravity. So like when we first learned about the gravity, it was a space-time theory that we learned as like just spatial theory. And then Einstein came about to understand the space-time. It's a four-dimensional manifold where we live with a metric theory. Mm-hmm. And what it now says is that in quantum regime, where the metric is not so rigid, because it's no longer classical, and then it's like random and all this chaotic nature, but it can be maybe understood using these non-gravitational, a dimension lower non-gravity system that we might be able to actually manipulate better and understand better from this being quantum as a nature. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of things that I really work about. So I usually make a more concrete way to compute these things and use mathematical structures to describe their correspondences and to be able to compute these entanglement entropy or the correlations of the particles like those together.
Very interesting. And then did you have a hard time kind of like conceptualizing it being quantum, and like, was that ever hard for you, or did your brain just work so well with it because it was such a math brain?
I'm sure no one will tell you that would be very easy yeah. to think about. I don't know. I think of it more of like, how do we understand these difficult and complicated nature? Mm-hmm. I mean, if we could understand that easily, there's no point of having physics as a discipline to mm-hmm. begin with. And break it down step by step to solvable questions, addressing this much more bigger problems and particular corners of those. And I use like a mathematical techniques to make those computable and realizable to understand what's going on. Mm-hmm. So at times it's hard to break down into that step by step to be computable and more explicitly understandable models. But I think that's also where the fun lies. I think that's the part that I enjoy the most about research.
Mm-hmm. And then can you share a memorable moment or breakthrough from your research?
So when I was in grad student, I was very depressed because I wasn't sure at some point if I'm doing correct. Mm-hmm. And I failed many computations. Now that I think about it, okay, like I failed so much, so I actually know what failed. So it was a great experience. But of course, me living past of that failure was not very happy with it. Mm-hmm. So I was very depressed, and one day I decided that, okay, so I'm going to just read different type of papers. It's in my field, but not like very small subfield, to read more and more about it. So that make me feel forget about the field computation I did earlier today. No way, it sounds very stupid, but I actually, this is one of the things I make sure that I do at some free times if I can get, which is very scarce nowadays, but because that kind of made me to open with my expertise and my backgrounds to attack similar but slightly different type of problems that I could address. One of which I was really a changing moment of my career was that one day it really made sense to me that there's this course that I took back in undergrad on von Neumann algebras and C-star algebras. So it's about that you can have different type of operators, the physical operators, and they will follow some commutation relationship or an anti-commutation relationship, like the ones that you saw in algebra class, like in junior high school. But like, it doesn't just do addition and multiplication, but you can do different type of group rules with it, and it just dictates how it can form still in algebra. And these are based on operators, so it's called operator algebra. You're not very creative. So these are particular encoding different type of mathematical structures as these algebraic structures that you can manipulate. And I really love this course because it was really fun. And I thought that it was boiling down to a lot of complicated problems about infinities. Like infinity is a hard thing to imagine because we live in only in C finite like distances and stuff, and a lot of difficulty was dealing with infinities. This was a way that infinities are usually coming from calculus, advanced notions of analysis, which is the type of field that I lack intuition for. But algebra is something I can just compute. It's like easy to toy around, so I love it.
Yeah.
And what was great about these courses were that it made analytical things to boil down to algebra, and I can just do algebra problem to deal with infinity and deal with it and be done with it. That's great. I'm a very practical person, so it was fantastic. And I realized that these can be utilized now in the context of these quantum field theory and quantum gravity theory. I can still have either local or non-local as operators, and algebraic structures still need to be manifest. I mean, we see gravity, which gravity then gives rise to these boost generators and has the relations then we have to satisfy, and you can actually precisely understand them. It's really fantastic. And in a way, I started now using them to address, to understand these bulk gravity theory with the boundary field theory correspondences to learn more about what we can compute about the quantum aspect of gravity. And that came with my first paper utilizing this operator algebraic approach to understand now truly infinite dimensional system of these gravity theories and field theory duals. And that kind of started a whole new program from being agonizing over failing over other hard computations. So that was very interesting outcome in the end. But I really think it's been going really fantastic. That's one of my main program that I have been pursuing with a lot of good explicit results that I can manipulate certain explicit toy models to compute these entanglement entropy for gravity and stuff like that. So that has been maybe one of my most biggest breakthrough moment that I had.
That's wonderful. And then how do these discoveries impact you, like knowing you're working on groundbreaking research that could advance the field?
How it affected me or
you or the field?
What is surprising to me that now a lot more people are using operator algebra to understand gravity aspects and black holes and whatnot. So it seems it really went to somewhere more fashionable. So I'm really happy about that. And more smart people working on them. That's fantastic. There's nothing to hate about that. Personally, it made me to reinstate why I'm a physicist. Because I was always fascinated about my gravity. In fact, gravity might be the really essentially the reason why I'm decided to be a physicist, not really a mathematician. Because it's something that I still see. And something that I cannot see to link to something that I can see is more intuitive to me, mm-hmm. whereas a complete abstract notion of math. But I love math. I actually love proving theorems and stuff. On its own doesn't satisfy me. I'm glad a lot of people do this so I can use their results. Mm-hmm. But my intuition is not really stemming from that. Maybe that's why I'm a mathematical physicist. So for me, it reinstated why I want to pursue physics and understand more about quantum gravity and its aspect about the quantum nature of the field theory. And it's been, I don't know, self-reinstating that I'm going to the correct direction to answer my questions.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. And then how important would you say is collaboration and community, such as the Aspen Center for Physics, in your field?
Communication and collaboration is very important. I don't think I could have written that many papers without my amazing sets of collaborators. Uh-huh. Actually, one of my friends was teasing me that I have an army of collaborators. It's really funny way to put it, but it's really true. I learned so much from my collaborators. Uh-huh. And I actually gained several of them during my visits of Aspen for a few times that I came here for. So Aspen is really fantastic. Also, Aspen kind of makes them to be themselves. They're in like a different place all together. And it's really free to roam around and communicate. You have bonding experience and there are not as many talks. So you can really talk to them. So currently I'm visiting here with two of my collaborators. Uh-huh. We did really make a huge progress that we've been working on over the years. And without Aspen Center, it would have been actually really difficult. It's much more easier when you're together in one place. Mm-hmm. That means like there's someone else next to me who can answer me a lot of answers and vice versa. I mean, I think doing any research alone would be so much more challenging because there's so much more smart brains that I can tap into, which is fantastic. I hope Aspen Center will survive long years so we can all do this over and over.
Has there been anything especially notably impactful from your time at the center?
Notably, I feel like every time I came here was very, very, very good. I think I gained some of the ideas how to think about why non-perturbative aspects of field theory is slightly different from in the gravity perspective than how I was thinking about it. And I kind of found a way to address it, to answer those type of questions while I was visiting here, I think about 2 years ago. And I benefited heavily from really like a 6-7 physicists who were roaming around here. And talking to them has been really concretely stepping down on what I can make that into a computable mathematical structure to address that. So I think that was probably one of the most rememberable event that I had here. Mm-hmm. But I mean, even this time I'm making a huge progress, so it's great. Yeah. I love here.
And then what advice would you have for high school students who want to pursue advanced studies in theoretical physics or mathematics?
I think in high school times, what can be difficult is that trying to go out of the comfort zone. Mm-hmm. Because not all cohorts will be interested in physics or math. And it makes you to be then having a difficult action to make a choice that I'm going to take a more advanced course, not with my cohort. Mm-hmm. And I think that's maybe a step that you will have to take eventually, that you are not necessarily defined by your peers. I think that was one of the biggest thing in teen that was somehow important a lot more to me then. Than now. I mean, now I don't really care. But I think as a teen, I did think about being with friends. Uh-huh. And that was somewhat important to me. If there are two friends, they will not leave you, even if you take more advanced courses and you can go to local university to enroll in more higher level courses. Mm-hmm. So that can actually satisfy your thirst. Because like you can ask a lot of questions from taking like pre-calculus about, well, where these actual algebraic relation comes from? And why are we learning about limits? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really addressing now infinity in the end. Yeah. And learning these actually correctly is more done in university level math. Because mm-hmm. I think I was a very, very annoying student. Like, but that does not make sense. What do you mean by this?
Yeah.
You're making me to compute this, but I don't really see the point of it. And that so what type of question is addressed in higher level, because it just kind of needs you to learn a little more to actually come up with those type of logic.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned a lot more by taking these more like linear algebra, abstract algebra, and real analysis type of courses
mm-hmm.
in undergrad level. And I remember when I was in TAing and grading, there were some high school students who were enrolled in university courses
mm-hmm.
so they can actually do that. And I think that was very good. So that's what I would recommend. Just continue what you actually want to do and think about what type of logic you would like and go ahead and take more courses.
Yeah, I can definitely see the social aspect stopping a lot of people, especially I think females.
Exactly.
In STEM, like in our physics class at our school, there's only 4 girls.
No, I totally get it. So I went to this special high school, so there were like so little amount of girls, like mm-hmm. They're like less than 10% girls.
Yeah.
And I was the only physics student from the high school,
mm-hmm.
even after the only national STEM school. So I remember suffering heavily from the social aspect.
Yeah.
I think it's really good to, you have to make that choice one way or the other.
Uh-huh.
If you want to be a theoretical physicist or mathematician.
Mm-hmm.
And if they really love you, they will still love you even after.
Exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today. And until next time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Monica.